Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Snail Nation. And what I'm going to do here is going to be somewhat off the cuff, but the overarching, I guess, theme you could say is, I believe it's time to put an end to the concept of the Black Code of Silence. And some people know what I'm talking about. There'll be quite a few that may have no clue. That's okay. Allow me to educate you. So when I was in school, when I was in high school and even middle school, there always seemed to be this kind of unspoken kind of agreement when it came to ratting someone out, quote unquote, or being honest about the misdeeds of someone else. And it's not just with blacks, it's with just about anyone. But there's certain topics, it just seems like, you know, we can't be open and honest about it in a public forum. And if it deals with race relations, if it deals with black criminality, if it deals with, you know, even things like father absence, which I've spoken on a couple of times. If it's about these ridiculous so-called movements like Black Lives Matter, things of that nature, you'll have a lot of people that some that'll slam those that are critical of these organizations or lean a different way that's not very popular on certain topics. They'll criticize them, or you'll have a larger group that just will be silent. They just won't say anything. They'll just kind of just la 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 la, just cover their ears, act like there's, you know, nothing's going on here. And you know, I think that type of mentality only feeds the beast, feeds the problem, makes things worse. So you know, there's just a couple things I'm gonna throw out here that I feel are maybe topics or statements that fall in line with that Black Code of Silence. So I mentioned it just a second ago. I've talked about it a couple of times, but I have to go back to the absolute cancer that has been inflicted on us all, known as black criminality. And I've shared things on social media. You know, I've talked about this a couple times before. And like a lot of these things that I'm going to mention here, black criminality being the first, what I'll get is I'll get some black people that will tell me, hey, you know, well, because I'm black, they can't just, you know, call me racist. If I was white, they would just call me racist or something like that to try and get me to shut up. But because I am black, I'll get a like, oh, hey, man, you can't say those things, you know, or that it affects the perceptions of, you know, the way our racial group is viewed by other racial groups, you know, in particular whites. And to that, I say, well, what I'm saying is true. It's factual. It really is a cancer. And I can prove to you that it's almost exactly like a cancer. And it's killing us. It's killing the nation. I don't understand. No, you can't, you know, yeah, but you can't really, you can't talk that, you know, bring that kind of stuff up, you know, because it's just not right. And when I just tell them to go pound salt and I just say, hey, you do you, I'll do me, then I'll get the shaming usually comes next, where they'll try to look up information. They look at you know, if you go on LinkedIn, they'll look at my profile, see what I do for a living, and they'll try to use that. Oh, well, you can't say that. I mean, you're... You know, you work for the government, or, you know, you've been in the military and that kind of stuff. You can't say things like that. Well, no, what I'm saying is true. And the statements I'm making are the statements of a private citizen. And I'm not being vulgar. There's no cause for any type of violence or anything like that. I just think that the first step to solving a problem is just acknowledging that there is a problem. I mean, that's the way it is with everything. And we can't even get to step one. We can't even get past the honest conversation, you know, that people like to throw out there. We need to have an honest conversation about race relations. We need to have an honest conversation about inequality. We need to have an honest conversation. No, that's not what you want. it's been my experience that you just want a bunch of people to give you money and for a bunch of white people to just spend, you know, a couple of weeks on the apology tour, you know, which solves nothing. You know, I am solutions oriented. I want to talk about the real issues, and the data is there that says there is a huge problem in this country, and black criminality is at the heart of it. And when you look at the numbers, and I've gone through this 100 times, when you look at the small percentage of the population, you know, the small percentage that we make up, 13%, I think it's 13.6% of the population. If you break it down by gender, it's even more horrifying. Because if you just go by gender, since a majority of these robberies and murders are committed by black men within a certain age demographic, if you go from 16 to 29, that's that sweet spot right in there. And then you look at that, oh, well, that breaks it down to less than 6% of the population is committing, what, 60% of all the robberies, 53% of all the murders. And then you look at black-on-black crime. Yeah, sure, the other races have that issue too, but we are out in front. Let me tell you, no one is better at killing black people than black people. And the numbers are astounding. And if you just look at just the past 5 years, you know, on average, as far as, you know, black homicides, the perpetrator, I believe it's 92% of the time, it is another black person. So out of all the leading causes of death, you know, all the things that kill just people, and then if you focus on black people that just, you know, kill black people, the greatest threat is, well, for me, would me being killed by someone who looks like me. So for all those people that go on and on about, you know, white supremacy and the KKK, like a bunch of people are going to come in riding on horseback with their hoodies and they're going to just start lynching people and that should be your greatest fear. No, my greatest fear is going back to the neighborhood that, for whatever reason, my mother still lives in, unfortunately, which is in the greatest area, and me getting held up and robbed and murdered by someone that looks just like me, maybe even someone I went to high school with, who knows? So please, just, you know, spare me. But it's something that we just can't, you bring it up, and some people will talk about it, but you'll get that, you'll get, you know, white people that are afraid to talk about it because they'll be labeled as racist because that's where we are now. And you'll get some black people that feel like they're like race trading or betraying some code of conduct, you know, by openly talking about something that is destroying the country. You know, something that these race hustlers and politicians and, you know, special interests are utilizing to commit whatever it is they want to commit. I mean, it's an excellent pond that you can just keep moving around. And people just, you know, for the most part, seem to roll with it. No one will challenge it. And, you know, that's one of the greatest problems in this generation is the lack of challenge. People are just saying things and doing things, and so many people just accept it. It still blows my mind, even though I've seen countless examples in recent years. It's unbelievable. So, black criminality, absolute cancer, must be discussed using the appropriate terminology. It's a cancer, and the numbers speak to that. And we're talking about two generations here that have some real problems that need to be dealt with because it's dragging everyone else down, and the data speaks to that. So that's one. Two, black lives ultimately don't matter to a majority of black people. And that goes back to those numbers that I threw out there and why there's this focus on white supremacy instead of black supremacy or, you know, black criminality. For whatever reason, of course, we got the mainstream media doing their thing, politicians doing their thing, and it's just not palatable to try and tackle black criminality. It's not profitable, you know. So I believe those are the big factors why this isn't really addressed. But people don't want to talk about it. The fact that you can have, and this is a rough estimate, about 300,000, you know, dead blacks at the hands of other blacks, black on black crime from 1976 to 2020, the fact that you can have that number, more than a quarter of a million, that's not worth discussing. That's not an issue that should be addressed. You know, even looking at all the robberies and the murders and the arsons and, you know, all that stuff. And then we saw in 2020, you know, all that looting and all that destruction and everything that was happening during all those, you know, mostly peaceful protests. And, you know, we saw the footage. We saw the pictures. I've even shared some. And 99% of the people you'll see in there are black. When you look at the people that died, the over, I think it was 26 people, 27 people that died, you know, during all these protests and all the mayhem, most of them were black. The people that they arrested for some of those murders, like the murder of one that comes to mind is David Dorn, that retired police officer in St. Louis, who died while he was trying to help his friend protect their businesses, and he was gunned down. And then those people, I think someone even live streamed his death on Facebook, you know, and they just ran through and they just robbed the place. All the suspects, all the ones arrested, black. No, no, but race doesn't matter. Race doesn't, you know, race doesn't play a factor in this. You know, that's what the media will tell you. Well, they show you a slate of, you know, 10 photos and they're all black. Or they're all from the same neighborhood. You know, same school. Nothing. That's not, you know. And people just eat it up. They just eat it up. It's unbelievable, almost unbelievable. But we've witnessed it. But you can't talk about it. I posted something on social media with just a couple of photos from a lot of the riots and things that have happened. Some fairly recent, a majority of them from last year. And someone still had the nerve to try and bring up the history of slavery. And I just laugh because those people, you know, clearly they've never studied any of the big booms and the big economic gains and all the black gains that happened from 1940 to 1960. Even the good things that happened from 1920 to 1940. For whatever reason, they just want to avoid that period. And I'm not sure how you can talk about, you know, you can talk about a legacy of slavery and skip, you know, how does that work? How does slavery, the legacy of slavery, skip several generations between 1940 and 1960? And why is it that after the Civil Rights Act, the Fair Housing Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, all those things that happened in the 60s, once we crossed 1972, all those things started to go into decline. All those gains from that time, either they either remained stagnant or they started to actually fall back. You know, how is it that the black poverty rate can be cut in half from 1940 to 1960? And then for whatever reason, when you cross 1970, it starts to go back up. I mean, how is it possible that black unemployment was lower under President Truman than under President Obama? You know, I just, and how is it that people can't see this? Why is it we can talk about, you know, the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow and use that as a crutch, as the excuse why, you know, black graduation rates from high school are so low, or undergraduate studies, master's level studies, all that stuff, all those things, they're very low. But meanwhile, you'll have all these wonderful people. Like, let me see here. Like, Mary Jane Patterson. Most of you probably have no clue who this person is. Well, she's a black woman who was born into slavery in 1840. She earned her bachelor's degree in 1862 from Oberlin College. She was the first, but she wasn't the last. And plenty that made it through Ivy League schools going into the late 18th century. You want to talk about the legacy of slavery? How look at these people. Some of them were earning their degree during the Emancipation Proclamation. You had people that were earning degrees at that time, blacks. And then there was the boom in the 1890s that happened. But we don't talk about that. Nope, we can't talk about that because that doesn't fit the bill. You know, that doesn't fit the narrative. because pretty much just us black folks, we're just incredibly poor, and in the eyes of mainstream media and these politicians and race hustlers, we're poor, we're ignorant, and we just can't do anything without the government. I mean, they have written this check with just unlimited spaces for zeros that you can write in there, and you can just keep claiming that you're helping the disenfranchised. You know, they love throwing that word out there. You know, all the poor black folks, man, they need big government to help them, you know, so they can't help themselves, even though you have immigrants coming in from all over the country that somehow figure it out. Immigrants that'll come here from Italy and from China and, you know, Venezuela and Mexico and different countries in Africa, and will just beat the pants off of blacks that are born in this country that have that head start, that know the language, that know the culture, that have access to all these grants and all that kind of stuff. And they'll come here, won't know any English, won't understand the culture, won't have any money, but they'll figure it out. Which is why when they do a lot of these studies to show the inequality in education and all these other areas, they'll leave out Asian immigrants. They'll leave out African immigrants because it blows the whole narrative out of the water. But that's something else that we just can't, you know, we can't go down that road. We can't openly talk about it honestly, with putting all the facts out there, all the information out there, because that means that someone would have to take ownership for the poor choices they made in their life. Because ultimately that's what life is, really. I mean, it's the sum of all the choices that you've made. This isn't rocket science. There isn't like a perfect formula to success, but there are a lot of things you can do to raise the probability of you succeeding. And sitting around waiting on the government to give you a bunch of money or whatever to get a couple more stimulus checks, yeah, that's probably not the best course of action to take. It's the easiest, sure. Just like looting, rioting, burning down businesses, attacking people, robbing people, all that stuff. Yeah, that's easy. I mean, violence is easy. It's the default setting for a lot of people because it's so easy. But actually using your brain, taking the time to think your way out of a situation, work your way out of a situation, add some actual meaning to your life, you know, that takes work. You know, that takes responsibility. And a lot of people just aren't ready for that yet, unfortunately. So, those things. So we got black criminality. We got Black Lives Don't Matter to Black People. We got, well, here's another one. Diversity is not our strength. Not in the way the term or the word diversity is viewed today. When I think diversity, I think diversity of thought. But unfortunately, it's been twisted into only meaning just having a bunch of people that look different, which means nothing, really, because you can have a bunch of people with different skin colors, different genders, and they can still think the same, have the same ideas, walk the same, talk the same, dress the same, act the same, all that stuff. Have the same mentalities, the same mannerisms. That's very possible. But the focus should be on diversity of thought. So whenever I hear that diversity, you know, is our strength, I always feel compelled to ask the question, and a lot of times I do, what does that mean? And that goes back to challenging. When people say stuff, ask that question. Ask a follow-up question. You know, get them to explain themselves. You know, a lot of people will use these empty phrases and statements that just don't really mean anything. They sound nice, they look good on paper, but they don't actually address anything. You know, there's no meat to it. There's no heart to it. So when someone says something like that, yeah, we need to do this because diversity is our strength. Well, how is diversity our strength? How do you define diversity? How does that apply to our organization? You know, what does that actually mean? You'll be amazed at some of the answers you get. Now, of course, as always, I always like to throw out there that I'm not necessarily telling anyone to do anything, but, you know, highly recommend that you take the time to do research and to ask questions. You know, that just questions, legitimate questions. So, and that's another thing that we just aren't really allowed to do. We just, in 2021, we just have to accept things and not ask questions. So, diversity is not our strength. Black lives don't matter to black people. I'm sorry. And black criminality is an absolute cancer that needs to be cut out immediately. All right, so next. You are your own oppressor. The word oppressor, or the oppressed, or oppression, you know, it's another word that's slowly dying, just like the word, I don't know, impeachment, or the word racist, because it's misused and it's overused to the nth degree. I mean, it's, you know, the oppressor is thrown out there every hour. The media runs with it. I mean, it's a great little phrase that just activates certain emotions, gets you thinking certain things. You know, just like the word slave, you know, you say slave and people think black, and then oppressor, they think white, you know, even though there were plenty of white slaves in the past as well, you know, so it's just, it's something that I find very interesting. But the onus, the power, and this is something else. Someone's talked about the power and the powerless in regards to just the toxicity of black culture, and of course tried to pass the buck on that and put it on someone else. And this it's amazing the things people will do, the excuses they'll come up with. And it's so patronizing, and it feels like real racism when someone will look at you or look at your group and label you as powerless, lacking of any agency, no sense of true duty or responsibility, nothing. Someone else pulls your strings, so it's their fault. It's not yours, because you're just too dumb or too broke or too ignorant, you know? Or too tribalistic, or whatever. And people will make these statements with a smile. Both white and black will make these excuses for just absolute madness and mayhem brought to you by a lot of, you know, black ignorant people, which we saw with all the rioting and all the craziness that happened throughout last year into this year. Some of it that it's still happening. And the bottom line is, look in the mirror. That is your oppressor. That is the person that's causing you your problems, your grief, or whatever it is. It's on you. And it's on you to change it. The person in the mirror, that is the person that can save you. Because true salvation, I believe, lies within. But that's something else that, you know, we can't talk about personal responsibility. We can't talk too much about self-improvement or focus. You know, we just can't do that now, because everything is everyone else's fault. Or when you talk about race relations, everything is the fault of the white man or the colonizer or whatever catchy phrase or whatever they come up with to just pass the buck. But hey, what do I know? And the final thing, no one owes you anything, nothing whatsoever. You were born, you're here, you put the time and the effort in, you put the work in, you achieve, you know, you have a family, you don't have a family, you know, you build something from the ground up or you build nothing. Whatever it is, it's up to you and no one else. Now, you can accept that reality and push forward and achieve, or you can just sit around for a couple of decades and wait for the government to do something for you or to give you something or force someone else to give what they have to you. You know, if that's how you want to live your life, hey, knock yourself out. I mean, there's plenty of people doing that. But the reality is no one owes you anything. Now, I'm not rich. I have a couple of bucks. I earned it. Years and years of hard work, getting different certifications, getting different college degrees, working my way up the ladder, setting money aside, all that stuff, all that normal, responsible adult stuff. It's not that hard, you know, but I don't owe you anything. I don't owe you any of it. It's mine. I earned it. It's for me and my family and our security. So yeah, no one owes you a thing. So just a quick recap. So we have black criminality. Black lives don't matter to black people. Diversity is not our strength. You are your own oppressor. And no one owes you a thing. I think it's pretty basic stuff, but some might see it as, you know, controversial statements or, you know, dangerous statements or things that shouldn't be discussed publicly or, you know, whatever spin someone wants to put on it to try and label it as something bad. But there's nothing revolutionary here. There's nothing mind-blowing, you know, no mind-blowing statements here. This is pretty, it should be basic stuff. This is stuff about just being a decent human being, a productive human being, looking out for yourself. I mean, personal responsibility, taking ownership of the choices that you make and how they impact your life is controversial. Yeah. Oh, 2021. What a year you are. Or I should say 2020s. What a decade you are. And we just got into it. So, you know, I wanted to try to keep this under 30 minutes. So I think I'm going to leave it there. But I am curious on your thoughts. You know, and obviously I don't care what color your skin is. Because I'm all about diversity of thought, diversity of ideas and perspectives. So please feel free to drop me a message, the Anchor app, or through review through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or you can catch me on LinkedIn. So please feel free. And I also set up Instagram. I haven't used Instagram in forever, but I set up a little Snell Nation, little page thing on there as well. So I'm not hard to find, but please. I love getting your feedback and your questions and any particular topics you want me to discuss. It's all good. So with that, Snell Nation out.